now join APR News Director Carolyn Zachariasen for the second portion of Aspen Public Radio's live Town Hall Candidate Forum from the Basalt Regional Library. Again, we invite our listening audience to join the discussion by sending us a tweet at aspenpublicradio.org using hashtag BasaltElections, or you can send us an email, news@aspenpublicradio.org. Thanks for tuning in.
This is Aspen Public Radio. Good evening. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and welcome to a live Town Hall Candidate Forum from the Basalt Regional Library. For the next hour or so, we will talk with Basalt mayoral candidates Rick Stevens and Jackie Whitsett. Earlier, we discussed issues with five of the six candidates running for three seats on Town Council. Please join me in welcoming our panelists. To start it off, each candidate will give a two-minute opening statement summarizing why they should be elected to office. After that, I will ask them a series of questions and then open it up for audience questions. Please limit your answers to 90 seconds maximum when we get to that point. Please, for those listening and in the audience, if you want more detail on the candidates' positions, log on to aspenpublicradio.org and read their answers to our questionnaire. I also understand there'll be answers to a questionnaire in the Aspen Times running on Friday, starting Monday. And we invite our listening audience to join the discussion by sending us a tweet at Aspen Pub Radio, use hashtag BasaltElections, or send us an email to news@aspenpublicradio.org. Let's start with Rick Stevens to my left.
Good evening. She just introduced me, so I won't bother to repeat my name. This is my third go-around at mayor, I think. I served 10 years from 94 to 2004, and running again. I want to thank KJAX and the community for showing up for this. I also want to thank all the people that have supported me this last month or so. This isn't anything you can do by yourself, and they really keep reminding me to stay the course and keep my head up and take the high road and all those good things that sometimes politicians forget about, and you move back into a discussion that isn't so fruitful. And that's not my intent tonight. I did want to say a couple of things, though, about what I heard from some of the candidates, and specifically the idea of old Basalt and new Basalt. The building we're sitting in was on its way to Elgibel, and old Basalt came out and said, what? We'll keep it here in Basalt. The post office next door was headed out to the edge of our urban growth boundary, and we decided to keep it here. The Midland Bridge that maybe some of you walked across or drove across was another project that Old Basalt put together. And what I think it's done is established a launch pad for the new Basalt to continue the evolution. And you can look across the river and see the park, and you can look right next door here and see Midland Park that was acquired during a negotiation with Basalt Trade Associates. So I'm very proud of what Basalt's accomplished, what the community's accomplished in the last decades. And I think that the young folks that are here tonight, that they are the emerging leaders, have a really great opportunity to maintain our small town character, make it pedestrian friendly and walkable, and deal with all the issues, fear of growth, and things like that. And you'll be able to get her done. You have a nice solid platform to start from. Thank you.
Thank you. Jackie? Opening statement, why we should elect you.
Thank you. Is my microphone okay? Okay. A long time ago, in 1996, I was commuting to Denver to finish my undergrad degree, and I came home one day, and Tim Whitsett said to me, you know, there's going to be elections in Basalt, and there's a lot of people that are antsy about the rate of growth that was happening at that point in time. And so I hunkered down, and while I was completing my Bachelor of Science in Denver, I was also running for election as a council person in Basalt. So I wasn't really even here, but people were very, very hungry back in 96 when business was booming a lot to get somebody in there that had what they thought was a younger perspective, because in 96 we were younger. And also, I had just completed my degree in land use and geology, and I think they looked at me as a person who could maybe help, you know, moderate the rate of growth a little bit. Since that election, I've been not only on and off council several times, but I was also the chair of the RAFTA board, have a long history with RAFTA. I have run two of their campaigns, the last one being the BRT campaign. The prior one to that was to make sure we got that Rio Grande Trail completed. I was elected to the Colorado Mountain College board. I've been on smaller local nonprofits like English in Action and many trails committees. I'm not going to list. But I also worked 10 years for the Colorado Association of Ski Towns. And that group is a nonprofit, and the membership is the town governments. It is not the ski companies. And SkiCo has their own industry association. But what I found in that 10 years working with Colorado Association of Ski Towns is that a lot of times the towns found themselves on the opposite side of issues from the SkiCo, and that is usually based on moderation of growth. So all I can say is we have a lot of change are going to happen here, and we just want them to happen right.
Thank you. I'm going to just jump right in from some comments that were made earlier with the town council candidates up here, and this is about style. And both of you serve on the board right now. And I had Katie be specific about her criticism about condescending tone of several officials, and she named Rick. I did not do the same with Leroy, who was discussing when somebody on the board said no more comments in public meetings, that staff are not doing their jobs. And he was directing that toward you, Jackie. So you both have issues, at least with the... people are running for the same board. So, Rick, could you please respond to that, and then Jackie, respond to it.
Sure. The Speaker of the House said the other night on television that if you've paid attention and you've understood and you've heard and you've listened and you've done your homework and you've come to a conclusion, and it may not be popular, that you have to go with what you believe and you can't be afraid to lose your seat. And maybe I said that in the manner that was, you know, offended someone, but the fact that I would say something like, I don't care, really isn't true. What it really means is that I've listened, and I'm not afraid to lose my seat if I vote to the way I believe I should vote. And I am pretty receptive to listening to everyone. I don't set my own agenda. My agenda has been defined by other people for the last 20 years. So I listen, I gather all the information, I make a decision, and I'm not afraid to lose my seat. If people don't like the way I react in a meeting, that's okay. They can talk to me anytime about that. But if I believe something, I'm going to go stay the course.
Thank you. Jackie, would you like to respond to
sure.
at least one criticism about you?
Sure. I think that most of the people in this room, because this is pretty much inside baseball, knows that there's been a tremendous amount of pressure on the council and on the town staff and everybody involved with the planning process that's gone on. I have to say that I've known Rick for a very long time, and I have found him to be a very respectful person, but as all of us do, when the pressure is great, you are a human being, and you sometimes have a tone that you maybe didn't want to cop at all. And I would say if that occurred on my part, which I have tried very hard over many, many years, whether it's be a developer or anybody in the room, to show respect, sometimes humans cop a tone that they didn't want to. So I apologize if that happened to me, and I know Rick, like I say, has been very respectful to me as the mayor, other people on council, people in the room, for the most part, as have I.
Do you think the staff is doing their jobs?
I think the staff is doing their jobs. I have to say I have, I'm on the minority on the council, and normally it's a 5-2 vote, and so the staff, they do their jobs, and quite honestly, they are guided by the majority, and that is what you have to do to keep your job and to basically make things run the way they are going to run. It is about who has the votes.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to the question I asked the candidates again, because I believe that it's the election issue for a lot of people in Basalt, and they'll be voting based on your positions and what you believe is the best use for the Pan and Fork piece of land. So what is your best use in your mind for that parcel? Rick,
me?
You go first.
I wasn't in favor of what the CDC proposed too much. And the fact that we had to buy an easement from them to access the river was what stopped me in my tracks as far as continuing to work with that developer. I voted on Resolution 9 to support that. I think it's a nice compromise between where we were at 75 to 100,000 square feet and where some people were at 30,000. It strikes a balance on the property that's pretty amazing, really, if you go look at the scale model. And I'm fine with that. The issues around specific uses and what actually gets built there is Resolution 9 has directed P&Z and the Post Committee, and other citizens can get engaged anytime this process unfolds in the next month or two and participate. And as an elected official, we have to wait for that information to come back to us. If we prejudice our, if we state our opinion now, it could prejudice what the outcome is on the property. We have a moral and ethical responsibility to stay open-minded and process this at all levels and then come to a conclusion at the end of the day. To make a statement now on which you support puts us at risk as a community as well as elected officials. So I think we want to keep the debate open, and we'll come to a conclusion eventually.
So, but it's park and
park
development.
And development, yes. I mean, the town needs to have density. It needs to create these opportunities that the candidates talked about for businesses to start here and young people to stay here. And the combination of all those things is what makes this community great. And we, like I said, we've set the stage for that. So there's really no excuse not to go forward.
Thank you. Jackie?
Yeah, thank you. I think that for me and many people in Basalt, our identity really revolves around what happens at this river parcel. For me, this is a place where we could connect by water and by trails in lots of different ways to all the rest of Basalt. We are constantly concerned that we are pretty sprawly, and we are. It is hard to connect us, but I think this is a wonderful place where we could start. And as far as what should be there, I am guided by what I have read in surveys and what I am hearing at the doors. Between Tim and I and some of the other candidates, we have knocked on 1,100 doors, tried to talk to about 1,700 people. We've called that same group of houses. And even though you try to steer the conversation to something that's not about the river parcel, that is top and foremost in people's mind. They want to know what's happening. So if I had to say what I would like to see happen instantaneously, I would like to go along and support the petition committee's request to put a question on the ballot to buy that parcel. I think we should buy that parcel. We have partners standing in the wings, as Katie pointed out earlier, and I think we should incrementally decide what to do there. We've got a lot of information from 400 different people who had input on that parcel. One of the things that comes to the top is a restaurant. So I will say restaurant, and I will say super active park, super big park where you could have regional events.
And then would the taxpayers have to pay for more of the public parcel?
Honestly, that is kind of unknown at this point in time. I know a lot of people are concerned about their taxes, but I think it's been repeated over and over again. We live in a state where you cannot raise people's taxes. We also have good reason to believe from conversations outside of our town hall that between Pickens County, Open Space and Trails, Eagle County, GOCO, and possibly even private funders, we may not be out of pocket at all. And the truth is that we have spent millions of dollars processing this, and that is going to stop now. We are going to have that money back in our coffers to use for our community.
Yeah, the finances surrounding this property. I mean, so the town, you do not dispute, is put $8.7 million into it, and there's probably a couple more million that would be needed for improvements, and then you're hoping to get $3 million back from some developer, right? Is that how you guys would characterize that, Jackie?
You know, I hate to jump into that whole professional financial conversation myself. I mean, I think some people would argue that a couple million of that money is sunk costs that we put in there. That's money that we're saying the CDC owes us. The CDC is saying, no, we don't. So I'm not sure that I'm going to sit here and make that call about whether that entire $8 million is owed to us. All I'm saying is that we have been willing in the very short last time frame to spend millions of dollars on consultants and attorneys, and we also have spent $4 million on affordable housing that we were going to turn over to the school district. That money would be back in our coffers. We spent $2 million on open space outside of our town boundaries. We could afford that. And I'm not against buying affordable housing or buying open space outside our town boundaries. I'm just saying, if we can do that, why can't we do it for ourselves?
Rick, do you have an opinion about the finances and whether or not it's council's role to let your electric know what's going on with the money?
There's two principal responsibilities for elected officials. One is the health and safety of the community, and the second is fiduciary responsibility. And as Jackie stated, we've arrived at a compromise, I think, and a direction was given to PNZ, and that'll help us figure out what the financial picture looks like. When you look back at the $3 million that was approved to buy the Levinson property and create Old Pond Park, part of that debt remained, and that's why we went out for $5 million, was to refinance that. So we have a lot of demands ahead of us. We talked about affordable housing, daycare, the underpass. In fact, the underpass bids came in yesterday. The engineer's estimate was $6.6 million, and the low bid was $6.2 million. So I'm totally confident that underpass is fully funded. That will free up some other funds, possibly, but our partners need to participate in other things as well, not just maybe the purchase of a bigger park. We need to have them support us in affordable housing, we need to have them support us in daycare, and we need to support us in this parking issue. So there's a lot more bigger global picture that needs to be examined when it comes to these things. Staff, we talked about them. We have a $10 million budget. We have 30 full-time employees. On an average per capita person, that's a $300,000 job per year that our guys are doing. Up Valley governments, adjacent governments, Avon over in Beaver Creek, they have an average of, call it, anywhere between $30 and $100 million and anywhere between 90 and 400 employees. And the average compared to us at 330 per head is running about $127,000. So our little tight little governance here is performing at an incredible pace and doing their jobs. And we need to fund these things. We need to prioritize what we're going to fund and then give them the direction to get it done. So I'm confident we can do a lot of things.
Thank you. This is Aspen Public Radio. You're listening to a live town hall candidate forum from the Basalt Regional Library. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. We are talking with Basalt mayoral candidates Rick Stevens and Jackie Whitsett. Earlier, we heard from five of the six town council candidates running for three open seats. We'll be taking audience questions a little later, and you can join us in the discussion by tweeting at Aspen Pub Radio, use hashtag Basalt Elections, or send an email to news@aspenpublicradio.org. Jackie, I'm going to ask you a question, and then Rick, I will ask you a question. Jackie, you said council's attention has been too focused on the short term, and we need to take the long view. What can you say about your leadership style that has kept you from focusing on the short term?
Kept me from focusing on—I don't really want to. Okay,
right. All right. On the long view.
Well, I think. Some of it is this, I really feel like in a way we are still somewhat concerned that we are in the middle of a recession. I feel like that is how we have been moving forward, is that we need to approve everything. I think there was a time when coming out of the recession, we were very happy to extend vested rights. People's vested rights had expired. We were really, really happy to extend those for those builders and developers who'd run out. But I think when I think long-term, I can cite an example, which is when the council approved an additional 90,000 square feet of development at Willits, our normal, even in our past history, would have been that we would have done an in-depth traffic study. Before we approved Willits as a whole, we actually brought in financial advisors to give us some idea of what were the implications to our old downtown if we were to approve that. And they told us straight out that if we approved 500,000 square feet at Willits, we would pretty much stop our downtown from growing and working well for 20 years, and that's kind of turned out to be the truth. So I guess I felt like that was a very short-term decision based on the needs of a developer And I would have preferred to have them build out what they already had approved before moving forward.
As the mayor, how do you try to convince your board to take the long view?
Well, you know, I think there are, you know, Rick and I have worked together for a very long time, and we agree on the apple pie and mom stuff almost always, but when it comes to development, we are almost always on opposite sides of the road. And that is fine, because I feel like Rick is doing it because he believes it's absolutely the right thing, and I believe it should be slower, incrementalized, and thoughtful. And I don't think that makes either one of us a bad person. That is my feeling, and when I go out and talk to people in the neighborhoods, that is the feedback I still get. So I will just keep heading down that road.
Rick, you approved the additional 90,000 square feet.
Well, ironically, I think it was 5-2, but I sat there and listened to the conversation about the PIF, which I thought was abbreviated, and we didn't really have a lot of time to really dig into it and see if it was a beneficial thing or not. And then I thought it was ironic that we turned around and approved 91,000 square feet without a blink. And I agree with some of the folks that said that the benefits we gained are great. But, you know, when you look back a little bit again, we created an urban growth boundary here in the town of Basalt many, many years ago that defined where we would grow to. And so there's a finite limit here to what we can do. We designed our infrastructure out to the high school to support the south side. That infrastructure is kind of laying fallow there. We could use a little more tax base out that way to pay for that system. There's a 2 million gallon water tank out there that's been funded for years. So, and I think the density issue in downtown is an important one. Density was never an acceptable term here for a long, long time, and that forced us to look outside our boundaries, and we had a lot of development pressure. What I want to do in the future and what I've done is try to take the speculative nature of development out of the equation and identify parcels that are receiving areas for affordable housing and other types of small businesses that developers will understand what we're looking for and will be in a much better position in the long term.
You voted for the PIF, right?
I did.
So
yes.
Would you have voted differently knowing that they were negotiating to sell a portion of Willits for $30 million,
speculative
real estate?
The fact that we turned the PIF down caused them to go out and find someone that they could sell part of the project to so that they could raise capital to finish their project. That's what I think. I don't know what they were thinking, but I'm not sure if we traded one developer for another. I'm not sure what their motive was. And it's none of my business, okay? The reason I say that I don't think that we investigated the PIF enough was because about half that group that was in the room that night were Willits residents that wanted to see the project finished. And they were tired of construction, they were tired of the dust, and all those other things. And I think as a community, as you look forward, you have to start to reinvest in the community yourselves. You cannot just rely on developers to get you everything you need. It's not working. And this was a way of trying to increase our sales tax revenues, increase our cash flow, help us get other things done. And all this money was going to go to public improvements. It wasn't going to go to the developer's margin. Would it help his margin? Of course it would. But you can't get a margin in business these days. It's almost impossible unless you've got something really unique. So it's tough to be in business. We're going to have to work closely with business to get what we need. Daycare is a great example of that. And I think you'll find that as we go forward, we'll develop stronger relationships with our partners and we'll be able to get these things done.
Thank you. You know, we talk about vitality, community, and housing in Basalt all the time, but what are some of the things you would do as mayor or council member to attract new business to Basalt? And I'm not talking about restaurants. I'm talking about businesses that bring employees, families, and professional opportunity to Basalt. Can you point to an example of already have done that? And how will you continue to grow the local economy independent of our Valley neighbors? Jackie?
That was such a long question. What would we do? Basically, the first part was, what would we do to attract business?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I liked Katie's idea about microloans or something like that to help people get started in business downtown. Also, in my door-knocking efforts, I ran into a woman who owned a store in Aspen, and she had what I thought was a great idea, and that is, rather than approving big boxes out at Willits, take some of that big square footage and make it into smaller pieces that could be family-owned businesses. She reminded me that we used to have a great winter market out there, which was chopped up into a bunch of pieces, and people went there all the time. It was really pretty fabulous. And I see that as a really a bona fide better way to approach things. If you look at Glenwood Meadows, where they did have a tax subsidy, they instantly lost the ice cream store, and it's been vacant ever since. And now they have lost two more big boxes. And my feeling is that maybe big box retail isn't necessarily the thing that works in small town America. It might work in big cities where there's masses, but I really think we should give small businesses a chance in smaller spaces, and we don't really have that available.
Okay, Rick.
Jackie mentioned she was part of the CAST organization, and in the late 90s, CAST hired a guy named B.B. Frick out of, or B.B. Consulting, mm-hmm. Ford Frick out of Denver, to do a study on core resorts and the economy around those core resorts. And all over the western United States, resorts were compared to each other, Sun Valley, Mammoth, Lake Tahoe, Taos, the Vail Valley, us. And what they found was in a linear valley like ours, you have a very limited amount of space you can actually grow into. And one of the things they identified was the towns that were closest to resorts were referred to as support towns. And they would provide some of the necessary businesses and support to a core resort. Now, we've all seen what's happened in the last 20 years up in Aspen Snowmass and how much it's grown. We made a decision quite a while ago before the master plan was updated in 99 to try to become an independent and standalone community. And we talked about how Independence Pass would be at Old Snowmass. And that encouraged us to go find businesses, architects, things like that, accountants that didn't have to be in Aspen any longer but could actually open their offices down here. And we created the light industrial zone across the highway that allowed some smaller contractors and locally owned businesses to come here and grow. And this valley is built on locally owned businesses. It always has been. We don't have a Xerox or a big car company or anything like that here. We've had family-owned businesses for generations, and I think we can continue to do that. So you have to understand economically where we are in the valley. Carbondale would be referred to as an agricultural community that was converted to a golf course. And if you look at the Vail Valley, if you look at all these other resort valleys, it's the same pattern. But we've been able to take advantage of it, I think, in Basalt better than anybody. Part of that is because we have two rivers.
Well, how do you get those businesses to come here? Backbone, or where are the emerging tech companies or the new outdoor gear companies?
Well, they want to come to a community where they know they have an opportunity, and we have to make it available to them. And if we don't, they go someplace else. So when the opportunity comes along and knocks on the door, what's the old adage, right? It knocks once. And we have to be prepared to accept them into our communities. And especially if they're relocating from Carbondale with 50 or 60 people that already work here, live here, have their children in daycare, it's a solution to the problem that we're trying to address. So, you know, that's how you get it done, in my opinion.
Thank you. Jackie, anything different you'd do in your second term? What would we expect that would be different?
Well, you know, Rick knows this as well as I do, is that if you have a supportive council, you can do more than if you don't have a supportive council. So, you know, if I were to be reelected and we had a little bit more, like some new blood and some other new ideas, I think that it would be much easier to move the process along, for one thing. I think this whole situation where we have sat here and ground in place for 18 months is a little bit crazy. I mean, the folks on the five side of the 5-2 vote have had the wherewithal to move this along forever because they had the majority vote. So I think that's part and parcel, is being able to have support on the board.
What if you don't? I mean, what if it's you don't get
same old,
your
same
slate?
Old?
Yeah. What, can we expect anything different from you as mayor?
Honestly, I think that it's time that we brought some facilitative kind of help in to help us work through this. I think that we are clearly stuck on some things, and I agree that we are getting closer to the end. For one thing, square footage wise, we are just fine. I mean, it keeps going back to the river parcel, quite honestly. Everything else we do seems to move along. But that river parcel, it is really boiled down to just uses. And I think maybe one thing I would like to do is bring in a professional to talk about what uses would be the most appropriate on a river keystone gem like that. Because we have not really done that.
Thank you. Rick, same thing. Any lessons learned from the last time around, and what can we expect?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, you need to focus on continuous improvement and continuous learning. And right now, the culture of leadership, I'm being asked that by the people that support me to try to effect a change in that culture. And what's going on in a lot of small communities and a lot of large communities, for that matter, and also in the work that a lot of nonprofits are doing with the issues of daycare and housing is more of a transformational approach to governance than a transactional approach. And we've been stuck in a transactional approach for a long, long time. And that's where, you know, you can use the phrase development needs to pay its own way. That's a transactional approach. Or you can use public-private partnerships that can create a transformational approach to governance. And you need leaders that aren't experts. You need leaders that can facilitate solutions to problems. And you get those solutions to those problems from the talent that you have in your community. And our community is very, very deep in talent and very, very deep in creativity and very, very deep in wisdom. And we need to take those things and put them all together and come up with solutions. And we haven't done that. We've waited for people to make a deal, or we've set aside a piece of property for a daycare, but then we never implement a strategy to get the daycare built. And we need to stop doing the basic baby steps and get into something a lot more deeper and you know, move forward.
Tell me, 30 seconds or less, what's the biggest issue facing Basalt besides the Pan and Fork and the Old Town versus Willits? What do you intend to do about it as well?
30 seconds.
Yeah.
Life, History of the World, Part 1. Well, I would like to say it's not about downtown, but honestly, I believe that the most important issue facing downtown, facing all of the community, is kind of about downtown right now. I mean, for me, the whole fact that this gem sitting downtown is the key to our vitality. It is our absolute identity. We actually hired people to come in and talk to us about how can we be like Carbondale? We don't want to be like Carbondale. The river is our future. It is our identity, and we need to capitalize that in a big way, and that is going to draw our community in and people from other communities.
Rick, what's the biggest issue facing the town?
Well, I think the biggest issue is if we continue to treat the community the way we have and not understand what the opportunities are here, it'll just stay the way it is. And we'll be influenced and overwhelmed and continue to be pressured by what happens up valley. We need to become a more mature community. We need to be able to negotiate with our partners at Pekin County and Eagle County and Rafta and the school district on a level playing field. I think if we look at what the potential is here and we treat this community as we should, it'll become everything everybody wants it to be. And that's my issue, is to you know, take a different approach. So thank you all for coming. I guess that's
thank you.
The end?
No, not yet.
Oh, wow.
This is Aspen Public Radio, however. And you are listening to a live... Now I'm going to ask you even more questions. You're listening to a live Town Hall Candidate Forum from the Basalt Regional Library. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen. We are talking with Basalt mayoral candidates Rick Stevens and Jackie Witsit. Earlier we heard from 5 of the 6 town council candidates running for 3 open seats. Now we're going to turn it over to audience and listeners for their questions. Please limit your answers to 90 seconds. And you can join in the discussion by sending a tweet to @AspenPubRadio. Use the hashtag BasaltElections or send an email to news@AspenPublicRadio.org. Hi, state your name and your question.
My name is Mark Cole. And first off, not a question, but I want to thank both Rick and Jackie for pursuing the position of mayor. The fact that you're willing to subject yourself to the criticism and scrutiny that comes with the process, all in the spirit of community service, to me, is admirable. So thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Earlier this evening, Rob Levitt commented that the town of Basalt each year gives $30,000 to help support daycare. And I've heard almost every candidate, whether it's for the mayoral position or town council, speak about the importance of daycare. And so help me understand why then the town has chosen to invest $100,000 and is demanding that the Willits Town Center project contribute almost as much over some years to WeCycle, when WeCycle is a concept that has only been moderately successful in Aspen. And by WeCycle's own people, they say this is the most rural setting that it will ever be tried in. To my simple mind, I say, boy, the town thinks WeCycle is more than three times more important than daycare.
Rick, would you like to go first?
Well, this is an issue that I think that is visionary and could work, and I understand your concerns, and it was received. It's a popular topic, and it's a popular topic among people who are trying to look at density in urban areas and mass transit alternatives and solutions to parking problems and things like that. But I wholeheartedly agree that we need to, now that we've established that and we've funded that, we need to turn our attention to other priorities. But that's the rationale behind it. It was presented very well by Merit de Marillery. And, you know, we didn't really put a timeline on it. I guess if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and we'll find that out. If it does work, great. In the meantime, we're committed to it, and we'll address the daycare issue here very soon.
Jackie?
Yeah, thank you. So that's a hard comparison, the daycare question with the WeCycle question. But that WeCycle kind of came to us at a good time, and that was actually an exaction from a developer versus daycare, which you could exact the bricks and mortar from a developer, but you can't exact operations costs from a developer. And that's where, you know, it's like when you exact a park from a developer, then you got to pay for it forever yourself. You know, you don't get it for free. So I've been on the RAFTA board, as you know, forever, and I am a firm believer that we live in a rural community, but we act as if we live in an urban community. We are super sensitive to using transit. We are like the second largest transit company in the state of Colorado, meaning we're ahead of everybody except for Denver in size because we use transit. We understand that getting that first and last mile out of your car so you can get there. Like I'm a mile and a half from the BRT station. I would go on a bike and leave it there, but I'm not going to walk there. So I think this is really going to ramp up our ability to leave our cars at home. I mean, I'm truly bought into Mirta's story.
How are you going to pick your child up from daycare?
WeCycle. Oh, no.
Is there baby carriages on the back?
I don't know. So we don't have ours yet.
Mark, did you get your answer?
I think I understand it a little better. Still doesn't make sense.
Transit's more important than daycare?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. Any more audience questions? John McBride.
Well, I reiterate that also. Thank you both for your public service. My feeling, this is a great, small, energetic community with a bright future. 50 years ago, we moved to this valley from Vail that had about 50 residents at the time. And with two children, Councilman Pete hadn't been born yet. We moved to Aspen, which at that time was probably the most energetic, exciting, fun community I've ever been to. And I had been brought up in the Midwest, lived in the East, worked in the West, military in the South. I had never seen anything like Aspen, the most fun place ever.
Do you have a question?
Yeah. Maybe not. It's just a speech.
I mean, I'll talk to you all night long if you want, John.
Anyway, all of the homes were occupied by locals. Today in Aspen, about 25% are. Prices have gone from like $20 a foot for for homes that were built up into the thousands. Rental space has gone from $4 to $100, $200. What was the great community has evolved into a private country club. I think this community, being near Aspen, is subject to that coming pressure. And I'm wondering what you're going to do to maintain it as a lively, personal, viable community that it is.
Jackie, would you like to go first?
Well, some people would argue with you that it's not as viable and fun as it should be already. I think that Willits has got a little bit of a leg up on downtown because there's a lot of restaurants and commercial and housing right really close together. And so I would say that downtown is getting there, and I think a lot of people are super happy with the way downtown is right now. The restaurants are all very busy. So I'm one of those people who says the glass is already half full, and I'm not sure that there's anything that needs improvement. I guess my only suggestion to all of us is that we try to keep it as good as it is and incrementalize any changes that we make, not approve ever again like was pending at across the highway from Willits, something that's another thing the size of Willits. You can't, it's very difficult to absorb. Very difficult to absorb large. And I think the traffic issues, I mean, at RAFTA we are talking with folks on studies about the fact that our intersections are failing. All of the intersections are failing. And so with that, I'll call it five.
Rick?
John, you beat me here by 10 years. So it was 40 years ago, and I washed dishes and did a bunch of stuff, taught skiing, still do. And, you know, fortunately, in 1981, my wife and I were in a lottery for a Lone Pine unit, and 104 people on 28 units, and we got our ping pong ball pulled out of the fishbowl, and we were able to stay here in a $55,000 unit. The next year, we had a son, and 5 years later, we bought a lot in Basalt and moved down here, and with a lot of people that migrated down here. And it started to become a more vibrant community in Basalt. There were hippies and cowboys and ranchers and, you know, all those things. And then all of a sudden there was a wave of young people from Aspen that came down, and the wives used to celebrate when they got a job down valley. They'd take each other out to dinner. And I think we can maintain that. What we need to understand is what our position is in the valley, and we need to take advantage of that. We can talk to our partners. I had a lot of conversations with Helen Klanderud about the city of Aspen actually participating with us in affordable housing, but she couldn't sell it to her elected board. But she was ready to do something with us. And those are the kinds of things we need to do. Aspen's built 2,500 affordable housing units, and that's the reason there's kids in the schools up there. It's not because all those parents can afford to pay, you know, millions of dollars for a house. My sons and I, my boys both went to Basalt High School. They have great careers. And one of them got lucky in a lottery, and the other one's trying to come back from L.A. and find a place to live, and the stuff we're looking at is unaffordable. But I think there's a chemistry here we can achieve if we can keep young people here, if we can bring our kids home and not have to have them living in our basements. The truth is local population.
Does that work for you, John, those answers?
I think so. It's a good start.
Okay. Another question from the audience. Just state your name and question.
I'm Patrice Becker, and when the trailers were moved from the Pan and Fork, we lost the diversity of the town. And I'm concerned about the diversity being an important component to a healthy community. And I have concerns about hotel and high-end residences on a place where our diversity was, and I want to know how we are going to regain those types of people back.
Rick, would you like to go first?
Sure. We earmarked 7 sites in the 99 master plan and 2004 update. We earmarked 7 sites within the urban growth boundary that were to be receiving areas for affordable housing. And the plan was to mitigate the housing issues on the Pan Fork because of the problem of being in harm's way there and living there. Plus, it was starting to become kind of a place where people were living in sheds. and we had one mobile home had 16 people living in it. And, you know, it's unacceptable to have that in your community. There's no reason to do that. And a lot of those designated areas, and that's when Bach got involved a little bit, were taken out of the master plan, and there was no message sent to anyone that could invest in those kinds of projects that we would accept them. We lost a 57-unit opportunity right up the street by Fisherman's Park when the second phase of the Roaring Fork Club was not approved. It's just the way it was. And, you know, whether it was a good idea to approve it or not, whether the recession affected them or not, the point is we lost 57 units. That was the target area for those homes to be moved to. And we turned it away. And, you know, we have to stop thinking about the fear of growth, the fear of traffic, the fear of all these other things, and try to solve these problems. If we have opportunities, we have to look at them seriously, and we'll figure out how to get it done. If we have to exchange some funding with a developer to do that, what's in the best interest of the community, to keep the diversity or lose them to someplace else?
Jackie?
Yeah, I heard at least three questions in there. One is making sure, at least my answer, is making sure that this beautiful parcel where real people used to live, a lot of real people used to live, is not changed out for high-end residential. I think there's a lot of people who really, really hated to see that part of our downtown disappear. I think, you know, kind of along what Rick's saying is we need housing in general, not just the diversity of cultures here. And I think we're going to have to do it ourselves. We're going to have to do it with partners of other governments and the private sector, because we cannot approve enough applications to get enough housing. The more you approve, the more affordable housing you need. And then lastly, the diversity question. Even though a lot of our mini communities, our sub-communities, may not be in the town of Basalt, we have a tremendous amount of diversity here. We just don't see them walking around downtown like we do in Carbondale. Don't ask me why. But when we knock doors, we find that there is diversity which is already inclusive in our community, even in the town of Basalt. So it's there. It's not visible like it is in Carbondale. There's people still out there that are not Anglo.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thanks. Another question? Hello.
Hi, RJ Gallagher. First of all, I want to reiterate what other speakers asked. Oh, here?
Yep.
Come up, yeah? Are y'all here? Can you hear me? I want to celebrate. By the way, it's St. Patrick's Day. Us Irishmen invite you all to join in with us today. I want to reiterate what the other speakers and everyone has said, how much I respect those that run for public office. It's something else, and I honor that and respect it wholeheartedly. I also want to make an offer to Jennifer, who I've never met, that I'm in on that event, the Kumbaya. I'm a firm believer in that. I'll help support it in any way, so let's connect. I want to thank Aspen Public Radio and you all, because I think you're putting a flag up for one of the most important things that are happening in Basalt for a long time. I think some things have gone a little crazy during this political season. I respected Scott Condon's column this week about the sign, and I was at Heather's the other night having dinner, and my colleague asked a girl what her sign was, and she pulled out his poster. I thought that was too much. And then I went to the restroom here in the men's room, and this was in there.
And so, this is radio, so it's a
I think this thing's gone too far.
Jackie Witsit.
I do have a question, and it's for Jackie, actually. I believe that what makes a board and a town council productive and efficient is diversity and balance. You're running on a sort of a platform with a collection of candidates. That concerns me. It feels like a mandate. It feels like an agenda trying to be driven. And I just ask why you think that's the best thing you think for the citizens of Basalt.
Quite honestly, I think we found, I barely know Jen. I've known Katie for a long time because we were on council together before. And I think we found ourselves on a similar platform anyway. And so, you know, it's not like we're sharing money or anything like that, but we feel like some of our platforms are strong enough together that we didn't see any harm. And quite honestly, Katie and I have talked about the fact that back in the old days, I think it might have been McBride, and Katie and I ran similarly on a platform where we knock doors together and basically campaign together. So, I mean, if that hurts us, then I guess that is the choice of the electorate.
Thanks.
Thanks. Okay, one more question, and then we'll call it. This came in from email. The lodging options for visitors who support Basalt's tourist economy are confined to VRBO, Airbnb, and two motels in the Element. These accommodations are often full. What solution do you propose to help us host the vacationers who want to stay and spend their money in Basalt? Rick?
Well, first of all, we are getting a lot of visitors coming here for the fishing and the things that already exist as amenities. We have a youth lacrosse tournament in Crown Mountain coming up that brings in about 1,200 young athletes and their parents, and they have to stay in Carbondale and Glenwood or at their friends' houses. And I don't know how you can build enough lodging to manage the demand that this valley creates for tourism. It's almost overwhelming. The issues up valley with, you know, they just declared a moratorium on any other development applications. So a lot of these things that have been talked about to increase their bed base up there are going to get stymied. Where are these people going to go? They're coming to Basalt.
Although that moratorium does not include lodging.
But it includes other commercial and residential and a lot of other things that it all gets tied together. It starts to slow down the whole thing. And that, here we go again, right? Here comes another demand on our support town to augment that decision. And it's sometimes those decisions aren't made in respectful ways that would understand what they do to us down here. So I think that the Elements is successful. I think that a small hotel here to support RMI specifically. RMI is going to bring a huge intellectual capacity to the valley, to our town, and they would like to have their guests and visitors and conference people be able to stay here and walk to RMI, not get on a bus and go to Snowmass, to Lodge, or down to Carbondale, or even to Willits.
So are you suggesting more hotels?
I think that we have an opportunity on the Clark's Market to refurbish some of that, but there's, again, like six different owners on that property, and it's going to be pretty difficult to tie that all together. I think that a small hotel complex here on the park would work, and who knows where else you might be able to do this. But it is an issue. We have to look at it, and especially if we want to have this discussion about becoming a year-round attraction, which I think we can benefit from Aspen's success at that as well, if that's what we choose to do.
Thank you. Jackie?
Yes, when I used to work for the Colorado Association of Ski Towns, we heard lots of times from hotel developers that you cannot build a standalone hotel. It does not stand up on its own hind legs. You've got to have a lot of residentials to support that, and maybe even commercials. So, you know, I think the challenge with hotel building is that you're building the church for Sunday, which is to say you have high season here and you have low season here. And people are not necessarily wanting to jump in there and have a hotel, just a hotel, because it's going to be difficult to make ends meet. So I think at least with the current developer we've been talking to, I think that's why he's very strong on residential and has never really promised a hotel-type environment. And also the fact that the Ehlers Report has told us that whether we have mostly park or mostly structure, there's going to be a huge public investment involved in paying for parking and other things. So long story short, I see that there's also a lot of VRBO and Airbnb out there, because when you knock doors, you know, the neighbor will say nobody really lives there. They just lock that house up for a few people once in a while. So I think that's also partly what's happened with our housing stock, is it's being sucked up into Airbnb. But long story short, I don't think we should jump in right away about a hotel. I think we need to see what happens seasonally with the Elements and the other ones and see before we make a decision like that.
Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have. So thanks to the Basalt mayoral candidates, Rick Stevens and Jackie Whitsitt.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Yep. Just a reminder about voting really quick. This is an all mail-in ballot election. So ballots were mailed out on Monday, March 14th. And they're out. And they'll likely be arriving this week, next week. So thank you. This is Aspen Public Radio broadcasting KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. You've been listening to a live town hall candidate forum from the Basalt Regional Library. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Thanks to the candidates running for Basalt Town Council, we now join Stu Huck, host of Jazz from Aspen. Have a great night.
If you missed a portion of this event or would like to listen again, you can go online, aspenpublicradio.org. Thanks so much for tuning in. Coming up next, Jazz from Aspen with host Stu Huck. Thanks for listening.